You're listening to Talk of the Nation Science Friday. I'm Ira Flatow, and for the rest of the hour, we're going to talk about your web browser. What do you use as your web browser? Chances are, if you're 9 people in 10, you're using Internet Explorer from Microsoft. But if you're as old as I am, I mean older than the woods, you can remember back to those early browser days. First we had Mosaic. Remember Mosaic? Then came Netscape. Then the battle royale with Microsoft over Internet Explorer, which included a major lawsuit, all kinds of sanctions from the Europeans, a battle that seemed to really be solidly won by Microsoft with an occasional side skirmish with smaller browsers like Opera or maybe Apple Safari. But late last year, a new contender arrived called Firefox, an open-source browser developed by a community of designers and programmers. And since its release in November, it has been downloaded over 26 million times. Some websites are reporting seeing declining usage of Internet Explorer since Firefox came on the scene. So what do you like about it? I'm sure you, as listeners, you've downloaded it, you use it. I use it. Everybody uses it at one point or another. You maybe use 4 or 5 browsers. Joining me now is Mitchell Baker. She's the president of the Mozilla Foundation, which is a nonprofit group started by Netscape in 1998. The group is the developer of several programs for working and communicating on the Internet, including the Firefox browser. They also have this free open source email program called Thunderbird. I consider it like the sister of Firefox. And Mitchell Baker joins us by phone from her office in Mountain View, California. Welcome to Science Friday.
Thanks. It's great to be here.
How did you get involved? Where do we stand in your involvement? How did you get involved with this project?
I got involved through Netscape.
Mm-hmm.
I joined Netscape pretty early in its life and so was involved with much of the browser history and came to believe that the browser is a really important piece of software. It actually matters in our lives. I was involved when Netscape launched the open source project, in thinking about how the project would run and operate from a non-technical side. Mm-hmm. And then in 1999, I moved to become the general manager of the Mozilla project, and I've been that ever since.
Do you carry battle scars from the battles with Microsoft?
Well, we certainly have a history. I've lived through most of that history. But our approach today is not revenge and it's not battle scars. Our approach is that the Internet matters. It's becoming increasingly important in our lives, and the browser that we use actually matters.
Tell us why. Well, I mean, to the layperson, a browser is a browser, but you don't feel that way.
Right.
Tell us why.
The browser is the way that we actually access the Internet. Right? We're all doing more and more on the Internet. We're not only buying books. Many of us bank on the Internet. Health insurance is moving to the Internet. All sorts of critical personal data about each of us is being transmitted across the Internet, and that will continue to grow. So the reason the browser, a piece of software that might seem like you should just ignore it, but the reason it really matters is the only way that I, as a human being, can access my data and see the information that other people have on the Internet is through this piece of software.
Mm-hmm.
And so if this software limits the kinds of things I can see, I'm just out of luck. If it treats them badly, or doesn't protect them well enough, I'm really out of luck. So as it's an important part of life, the way that you can get to it really matters.
Why is Firefox better than the others?
It's designed solely for the benefit of the user. Our mission in life is not to go out and make a giant return on investment. Our mission in life here is to provide a good experience on the Internet. So it's designed for the user. It has quite different architecture, it especially in terms of security and security flaws. It has a range of features that just make using the Internet better.
Mm-hmm. When you say it's designed for the user, what is the user part? What user part are you talking about?
Well, when you sit down to design a product, you can approach it from different ways. You can say, what's best for my business? Mm-hmm. What's best for making money?
Right.
What's best for the user? Right. And that's the perspective that our project allows us to have.
Now,
right?
Well, what give me a feature that's better for the user than, let's say, Explorer?
The one that well, the two that most people point to are pop-up blogging. Mm-hmm. You know, those annoying ads. I almost never see a pop-up anymore. I just don't experience them on the web. And people come to us and they often say, you know what, I can barely get to the site I want to see, and once I get there, I'm just inundated. I feel like I have lost control of my computer. Well, I don't have that experience because I don't see those pop-ups. Secondly, there's a feature, it's known as tabbed browsing. It is a metaphor for when you have many different folders on your desk and you want to move through them. This allows you to open many different pages at the same time on the web and sort of stack them up and move among them. It seems like an arcane feature until you try it, and then you think, how could I live without it?
Mm-hmm.
A third feature would be the find feature, which we're all accustomed to in word processing documents. You can actually do that on a web page. So, for example, if you do a search and you come up with a page and it's a long web page and you're looking for a particular term, you can just find it by typing in the name of that term.
Mm-hmm.
And then there's a set of sort of privacy features. So, for example, if you're in a public place or you're in a library or you share your computer and you do a set of searches and maybe you're looking for a wedding gift or a birthday gift, so you don't want the next person who comes along, like your wife or your child, to see what you're doing, it's easy to clean out the searches and all the information about where you've been and what you've been doing. So that's a sample of the kinds
right.
of features that exist.
I think one of the challenges to any web browser designer is trying to keep up with a lot of sites now or make you or almost force you to use the Microsoft product. A lot of bank sites, you know, for example, they'll detect you. It'll say you're not using a Microsoft product, and we won't let you in. How do you deal with that?
We've dealt with that in a couple different ways. There are many sites, many fewer sites, of which that's true. Banks probably are among the most difficult right now in terms of it takes time for them to figure out what the issues are and to certify new browsers. But that is, so the first thing is we spend a lot of time working with websites to explain to them how not to do that.
Mm-hmm.
Turns out, you know, there are a lot of tools out there, and if you're not careful, it's just so easy to get IE-specific stuff. The second thing, of course, we have a program, part of our open source community, of people, when they find such websites, of writing to the website, talking to the webmaster, explaining what the problem is, and they can't use that site as well.
Mm-hmm. There are reports that the Mozilla Foundation is no longer developing other applications outside of Firefox and your Thunderbird email client. Why is that?
Oh, I think that's a bit of confusion. We have a legacy product, which is the product we first started with, which is a large integrated set of applications. It's a browser and an email client, our previous version of them wrapped together, and we've been in the middle of a transition from the old product line to the current product line, which is Mozilla Firefox and Mozilla Thunderbird. And so we have recently announced clearly that continuing new feature development on the old product line will stop, mm-hmm. but we still continue to produce world-class browsers and email clients and mm-hmm. other projects as well.
Let's go to Buck in Calistoga, California. Hi, Buck.
Hi.
Hi, go ahead.
Okay, I like Firefox. That's my backup browser right now. I'm using Opera.
Uh-huh.
Yes.
On your Mac?
On my PC.
Mm-hmm.
Actually, my company laptop, I have to have Internet Explorer because that's our help desk demands that we use that.
So why isn't Firefox your number one browser?
I find that the newest edition of Opera is a lot faster as far as loading pages. It has tabbed browsing in the original application, and also it has mouse gestures. It's not an add-on,
mm-hmm.
which Firefox does.
Mm-hmm.
I can get to about 90% of websites. The other 10 that I can't, I copy and paste into Firefox and go there.
Mitchell, any comment? Do you want to win this guy over?
Well, first of all, you know, choice and competition is good,
right?
That's why we exist. You know, on the faster and the speed piece, it's highly individualistic, right? We could engage in a long discussion with people who find Firefox faster, but the reality is that Buck's experience, for some reason, Opera may be faster. And it may be, in his case, that the particular set of features that Opera offers built in work exactly for him. We found, with our experience, that it's very hard to get the right set of features for everyone. And so we do what Buck describes, is we ship with what we believe to be the correct minimal set of features that most people want and provide these other things like mouse gestures as add-ons, which are very
right.
easy to add on. So in terms of reaching the broad community with the lean browser that most people want, we think we've got the right decision. It could easily be that Opera has the combination that just works best for Buck.
Mm-hmm. What is your target of market share? Right now, what percentage of the market do you have? What would you like to have?
On the first side, what percentage do we have? You know, we do not track our users, right? Our user base would not stand for us trying to track who, mm-hmm. who used our browsers. So we rely on the same statistics and surveys that everyone else does, which is showing, you know, i.e. below 90% and certain places in the world where Firefox seems to be considerably higher market share. So we don't have any special information on that. We also don't set an exact number. We don't say, gee, you know, we want to have X percent of the market share. What we say is we want to have enough market share so that the number of sites that have IE-specific or any browser-specific feature goes down to just about zero, mm-hmm. right? We're starting to see, it turns out, you know, that 10% market share starts to make a difference because that's millions and millions of people, and, you know, businesses don't really want to turn away millions of people, but we do want to grow from where we are.
Yeah, okay, well, so you're shooting for 10%.
We're at 10%, I think.
You're at
10%.
You're at
10%. Something about that.
You're
somewhere
at 10% already.
Wow. Somewhere around there. That's what the surveys show, i.e. below 90% for the first time, and then trying to sort out exactly how much is Firefox here versus, you know, in Germany or somewhere else is a little hard.
Tell us about Thunderbird, the email client. We don't hear very much about that. Why is that so untalked about?
Couple things. One, we've always been known for the browser. That's always been the flagship, and everybody uses a browser. The email client has gotten very good reviews as well. It is a little more work to change your email client. So the number of people who can just go out and say, boy, let's try it for a day or two is smaller. Right? When you get Mozilla Firefox and you go to migrate, you know, you download it, you install it, everything migrates. Your bookmarks, your cookies, all the stuff that you need just appears. Right. With an email client, that's harder to do because you must set up an account with your ISP provider, you know, your mail server provider.
Right.
And so we can't provide instantaneous migration. So that's one thing. You know, you have to go through the account setup. And then shifting email clients is a sort of a bigger job for people. And so the number of people who just go try that is always going to be somewhat smaller. So I think that's why. And then there's a set of people who really need a calendaring functionality to go along with their email client, and that's under development now, but it's not out as a product, and so there's a set of people who are waiting for that as well.
Talking with Mitchell Baker of the Mozilla Foundation on Talk of the Nation Science Friday from NPR News. And, of course, people, you know, well, your email client already has an address book in it too, doesn't it?
Yes, it does.
Yeah. No, it's quite good. You're right. You just can't download it. You have to make a little bit more of an effort, like we nerds on this end like to do those things on a Friday, you know, when office or something.
I'm not that thrilled about setting up new email accounts, and it's actually simpler than I thought it would be, but nevertheless, it's not quite the instantaneous.
Is the web browser going to be the application of the future? And when we turn on our PCs one day, is it just going to be a browser there in terms of not our desktop will become the browser?
I think they're going to coexist for quite a long time. But we are seeing more and more applications and more functionality provided through the browser. So what would be a good example of that might be, say the mapping services you know, that you might find at Yahoo or Google or you know, any other large mapping services. Those things come to you through the browser, and they're getting increasingly sophisticated. And we're also seeing development of whole sets of applications, you know, reservation services and so on, which are delivered through the browser, but with a much closer connection to the information on the back than we currently have. So I think what we're going to see is the desktop functionality will be around for a long time. It's been very effective, and it's pervasive. But we will also see the growth of a set of applications which tie the desktop to all the sort of information that lives out on the Internet. And I think there will be increasing sophistication of those applications.
Mm-hmm. Let's see if we can get another phone call in here from Don in Corvallis. Hi, Don.
Hi. Thanks for taking my call. I'm a Firefox user and Thunderbird. I love both programs. Thunderbird was easy, I got to say. Don't make it out like it was difficult. My question is how do you make money doing this? If you give it away for free to everyone, how do you pay the bills?
Good question.
We do a couple different things. We have some classic nonprofit donations, right? It's thousands of people actually send us $20 or $25 or sometimes $100 or $500 or whatever it is. There are also a set of companies that are interested in having the Mozilla Foundation succeed, who provide some support to our core employees. There is
how many employees are there?
We're just grown to about 18.
18.
You're getting health insurance?
You know, these 18 are the, you know, that's the core that coordinates at the center. But of course, there's many other volunteer and full-time employed contributors from other employees, you know, that that contribute as
well. So there are a lot of volunteers who work for you but don't get paid.
They don't work for us, actually. Yeah. There are a lot of volunteers who work for the project to create what they want. Yes, that's right.
And that is sort of the beauty of the whole open software system, is you have all these people working to make it better for you.
Absolutely. It is a development system that has many benefits, one of which, of course, is expertise, you know, which is in odd places around the world. So people appear who can do things that would be very hard to find. One's in Bulgaria, one's in Sweden, one's in New Zealand. You just don't know where they'll come from. So you find expertise. We get phenomenal testing, which turns out to ship a great product. The testing is very hard and often underrated. And also, this group of people contributing their own time and energy is really passionate about what they're doing, and they help us run the project better. But I think we do a good job, and we work very hard, but no human being on Earth here is perfect. And so this set of volunteers, they're not at all shy about saying, you know, I don't think you're doing the right thing, or I think you could do better, or I think you should be focusing here, and you, why don't you do this stuff?
Yeah.
And often, you know, that they really help us do a better job in a way that an employee trying to talk to his or her manager might not feel nearly as comfortable in saying, you know, this is really wrong. You need to, you know, change your direction a little bit so that I can really participate.
All right, Mitchell Baker, we've run out of time, but it's been quite interesting talking to you. Please come back and join us on Science Friday.
My pleasure.
Mitchell Baker is president of the Mozilla Foundation, a nonprofit group started by Netscape in 1998, and they make the Firefox web browser. Our program is produced by, Karen Berghoff, Charles Berquist, and Ed Heist, and all those folks who make our show for us. We had help today from NPR librarians Keem Molesky and Alphonse Finn. Surf over to our website as I rush to get out to meet the clock at sciencefriday.com. Also, Science Friday's Kids Connection is there, and you can download free teaching curriculum. Just click on our teachers button. Have a great weekend. We'll see you next week. I'm Ira Flatow in New York.